taxation without representation. 200 years of exploitation in the capital of this nation. No representation in the capital of this nation. 200 years of exploitation. Give the people their right to vote.
Someone asked me, was it true? The voting rights of the district were long overdue.
That was Sweet Honey in the Rock with Give the People Their Right to Vote. Hello and welcome to Shadow Politics, an hour-long grassroots talk show which will attempt to shine a light on the issues that you care about. I'm your host, United States Senator Michael D. Brown, coming to you live from the District of Columbia, America's last colony. Along with my co-host, Maria Sanchez, we hope our show will start a dialogue with America about the issues that are important to you and affect the lives of all of us. So join in the discussion by calling in at 888-627-6008, or you can Skype questions to us at BBSRadio1. We have no guests tonight because we have a lot of important things to talk about. But
it's
Maria,
so
are you there?
Funny. I am, but it's so funny when you say we have no guests. Who the heck cares? We have our opinions. That's all that matters.
Well, and to tell you the truth, the first guest I want to talk to is you, because I have some questions. I want to talk about this Pizzagate thing, and I have some questions.
Oh my gosh, has that taken on a life of its own or what?
Yeah. So really, I'm really concerned about the media aspects of this. But first, before we even get started, I'd like to take a moment of personal privilege to say that some of the worst news that I got this week was the passing of John Glenn, who was, you know, a real American hero.
Can you imagine living that life?
No, I can't imagine.
I can't either. Life. I mean, really.
And
his not only his accomplishments and his character and his contributions, that's the three C's, but his marriage and how he led his life as a human being.
Yeah, well, I've met him a few times. I don't know him, but I've met him a few times because he, of course, was a United States Senator. But my brother, who was president of a college in Ohio and a veteran, had occasion to meet with him one time. And he asked Paul what he had done in the service. And Paul said that he was an F-111 pilot. And John Glenn said that he thought that was really cool, and he would want to, something he would have liked to have done. And my brother just couldn't get over that. He called me and he said, "Can you imagine that this guy thought what I did was cool?" You know, and really, we both laughed about it because, what he did was so cool. And if you've never come to Washington, folks, come. Go to the Air and Space Museum and see what this man went into outer space in. I mean, it is smaller than my car. It's half the size of my car. And basically what they did was they strapped 1,000,000 pounds of propellant to his rear end and blasted him into space. I mean, you know, these people were really brave and they really were heroes. And you're absolutely right. That's the best thing about him is the way he lived his life. So we're going to miss you, John Glenn. He was 95 years old, 95.
And
he
married 73 years.
73 years, yes.
Can you imagine?
By the way, Annie Glenn was one of those wives on Capitol Hill that just had the reputation in politics as being this wonderful, wonderful person. I never had the pleasure of meeting Mrs. Glenn, but people that I knew who knew her or had worked with her raved about what a wonderful, wonderful person she was.
And she had some kind of like a tick or
she
stutter.
Stuttered.
Yes.
Yeah, she was
and that he was fiercely protective of her. And yeah. I think when I think about all of those stories, I think, how sweet is that? It's just the sweetest.
Yeah. And that's probably the toughest thing, you know. I say all the time when bad news stories come out about me, and I've run in local races, I say it bothers my family much more than it bothers me, you know, because I accept it. It's like throwing an elbow. That's the way I look at it in the NBA, you know. That's not a nice thing to do, throw an elbow in the NBA, but it's part of the game. And if it bothers you, maybe you
get out.
Professional basketball, right? So that's kind of the way I feel about it when I read some ridiculous press story about me. But it bothers my wife and it bothers my kids,
of course.
You know. And so I'm sure that he was very protective. Because he didn't want the press to, in any way exploit her. And she was just, from all reports, she's just a wonderful person. So our condolences go out to the Glenn family.
Completely. Right.
And America, because you know what? My personal opinion is not that you can ever have enough heroes, but we need a few in America these days. So, and moving on from there, let's start by talking about Pizzagate. We were going to have somebody on, actually, from the restaurant, but then we decided they decided against it. I don't think they want to exacerbate it. I don't blame them. They've just been – I mean, it's just crazy.
It is crazy. And so are we going to say, okay, so the fake news is a story.
Right.
The alt-right is a story. Hmm. People being – like, what's the end game here? Just
right.
Even if you were a perpetrator.
That's really the most troubling thing, isn't it? What is the end game?
Right. I don't get it. I don't get it from anybody's perspective.
Well,
it's only bad news, period.
Right. And you know, the fact that it's not grounded in anything. And by the way, let me just run over quickly in case some of our listeners don't know what's going on. But there were emails that came out during the investigation by the FBI. Some of them were Podesta emails sent to WikiLeaks that mentioned a local pizzeria and a guy that eats there named John Podesta, who was the campaign chairman of the Hillary Clinton campaign. And from that, this fake news story has come out that there was some kind of ring of pedophilia going on in the pizza parlor because of some code word or something that was reused. First, and this has resulted in not only being spread through the internet like wildfire, but last week on Sunday, a guy walked into the pizzeria with an AR-15 rifle, fired off three rounds, didn't hurt anybody, thank God. All the patrons got out, but the police surrounded the building, and it took 45 minutes for him to surrender. And this is the question that I have for you, Maria, because of your experience in the media. Now, this guy said he was there to investigate to see if anything was really going on, and that he found nothing. But that didn't stop the conspiracy theorists. They said, well, you can't believe the news media, and that's why he went there to begin with, because you can't believe the legitimate media. And they've even said that this may have been a setup to make the story seem false when it's not in fact false. And so what do we do with that? If you can't believe the legitimate media, the mainstream media, or you know, what do we do about that?
So it's to that point, Michael, at one time in my career, I had a morning drive radio program. I was on the air from 6 in the morning to 9 in the morning, and it was just me and my news guy, right? And so I'd get up so you're continually prepping because news is always unfolding.
Right.
But you have to go to sleep at some point. So I'd get up at 3 in the morning, and then I'd prep until I was on the air at 6 a.m., finding out what had happened while I had been asleep, while my listeners had been asleep, and to get to the what's the most salient stories that people need to know about? Because Morning Drive listeners are really interesting. They're very, very ritualistic in their schedule. I don't know about you, but people would tell me that they'd actually set their alarm for 6:05 because they knew that I'd be on. That's when I'd start my broadcast. And they'd lay in bed until 6:30, and then they'd do this, and they'd make their coffee, and they'd take their shower, and then they'd get in the car, and then, you know, what have you. So I would pull from three sources the same story. I always started with Reuters, which is in the UK, because it was not through our lens here in the United States. And then I'd usually go to like the Washington Post and maybe the New York Times. The exact same story would have three different versions. Yeah. And I always found that so curious because I'd like, there's only one story. But the truth is that there are people who are interpreting the story.
Right.
So it was through their lens, through their opinion. Just like they say when there's a car accident and you've got 10 people, everybody sees something different. So that's, I think, the innocent answer to why we get a different version of what the reality is because it's being filtered through a human being.
Well, and that's, isn't that in itself a problem? Because if you say there is no, you know, as a liberal, for example, if I said there was no bias in mainstream media, that would be ridiculous. Of course there's a bias. There's a bias because there's somebody reporting it, right?
Correct.
Yes. So right. So if you're a liberal, there's a liberal bias. If you're conservative, there's a conservative bias. And that's why I listen to Fox News as well as MSNBC, because my feeling is that the truth usually lies somewhere in between the two extremes. But yeah, that's a real problem. But when you have MSNBC saying something and people are saying, well, that proves the conspiracy theory is true, right? What do you do with that?
I do bounce. I go Fox, CNN, MSNBC. As soon as they break for whatever, I go, you know, back to the next, because I want to know what people are saying. I know what I think. I know what I believe. I know what I feel. I want to hear what other people feel. So as a broadcaster, though, I have to say, I did my very best, and I would usually even introduce it as, this is not of my persuasion, or this is not how I feel, but this is what people are saying, and then I would say whatever. Because you can't help but have an opinion, unless you're some automaton or something, right?
Of course.
So, but to have bias in your delivery, I think, is a disservice to all concerned. That's news. That's opinion.
And I just worry about the internet as a news source. You know, Denzel Washington, strangely enough, said in an interview, if you get your news from the internet, you're uninformed. And if you get your news from TV, you're misinformed. If you get I think he said the newspaper. If you get your news from the newspaper, you're misinformed. I mean, that's scary. That's scary because, you know, I don't think that people generally look for the truth. I think that people generally look for things that support how they feel already. Right.
I know, but how insecure are you if that's the whole purpose of your journey is let's make sure that I'm right. It's like, how about let's make sure that I know what's right?
Right. Right. Absolutely. But it's scary. And I'll tell you some of the things that are scary about this thing is not that. Oh, by the way, just so everybody knows, one thing, the pizza parlor in question is in my neighborhood and I frequent it with my children. It's where I had my election night party. My last election night party was in the secret room they talk about, which is not a secret room, but it's just the back of the pizzeria with a bar, and they have bands back there and stuff. But that's where I have my election night party, and I am proud to say that our election workers were mostly homeless people that we hired to a program where we paid them $15 an hour to go out on election day or do early voting to give out literature, and we had a party there for them, and it was so cool, and they loved it, and these people are so nice. And I've also worked with these people on a fundraiser for a nonprofit group. So, you know, they're good people, and the good, and so I know for a fact all these things are lies. And on top of that, the good news is that their business hasn't really dropped off. People have stood up for them, and they're going in, and they've made like a memorial. You should see the front of the pizzeria. There's a flowers and posters from kids who say, "We love you." And, you know, it's so that's the good news. But here's the bad news. Now it's spreading. There was this woman, Maria, what's her name? Monica Peterson, who went to Haiti to investigate links between the Clinton Foundation and human trafficking. Okay. And what? Unfortunately, yeah, she did. She went there. She's a human, you know, that's her thing. And she read somewhere on the internet about human trafficking. And you know, these are, again, all unsubstantiated claims. And she went there to investigate the Clinton Foundation gives money, you know, to work programs down there, and she went to investigate them. Well, she committed suicide. And so now this has been linked. These guys are linking this to Pizzagate, saying that she found things that connect the pizzeria somehow.
You're kidding, Michael. No. You couldn't make the – Dan Brown couldn't write a better novel.
Right. Well, and that's the thing. It's all made up. And the worst thing to me is that the National Security Advisor that's been nominated, Michael Flynn, put this stuff out on his Twitter account and said, "You decide." And Colbert did a thing this week where he said, after he played showed the thing where Flynn said, "These are the facts of Pizzagate, you decide." Colbert said, "I have decided, and I've decided that I want to. I don't want a person that would spread this kind of stuff as my national security advisor." And I gotta agree with him. You know, either Flynn was, you know, didn't realize it was a fake news story, and you don't want a guy like that being your national security advisor, I don't think, or he passed it along, which would be even worse. Now, the only problem
isn't Flynn's son also responsible for some of the
and they fired Flynn's son.
Oh, that I didn't know.
Yeah, he was an advisor to Flynn, and he fired him. But, you know, I mean, come on, this stuff is crazy. And of course, there's nothing we can do about the National Security Advisor. Now, if Trump nominates somebody for a cabinet position, right, you could always put pressure on your senator to block the nomination. But I don't think you can block the nomination of the National Security Advisor. I may be wrong about that, but I thought
they all were subject to approval. All of them.
I don't know that he's. If he needs to be approved, because he's. I think as the advisor to the president, that's what he is. He's the president's personal staff. Just like if he wants to if he wants to make Rens Priebus
because he's not a cabinet
director, right, he makes him his staff director. If he wants to make Kellyanne Conway, you know, something, as long as
he better make her something.
If I were her, I'd want to be. I'd want to. You know, I. This is the time to make money, Kellyanne. Well. If you don't know that she's a brilliant political strategist by what she just pulled off, I mean, no matter what you think of the woman, you got to say, holy moly, man, she may know more about politics than any of these guys do. So, yeah, she ought to have some.
And what about Rudy Giuliani?
What about Rudy Giuliani?
You know what they're saying? Okay, so he recused himself, right? So thank goodness he's still not standing in the line, because I was like, why hasn't he been appointed something soon? He traveled over 100 days with Trump on the campaign trail. And I'm like, what's going on here? What did we call him? America's mayor? governor?
Well,
when he took care of New York City?
Democrats call him. Yeah. Yes. And
he did such a great job. And then now he's just kind of on the sidelines, marginalized.
Well, you know, you wonder about this, you know, what that means at this point. Maybe he won't, in the end, maybe he won't be. But, you know, one thing that's very interesting with these guys as they approach this level of government is there's a feeling inside their campaigns. You know, now, it must be hard to understand that for the average person, what it's like to work on a campaign and then achieve this kind of success and have to make the transformation into government. Okay. Cause they're two kind of separate things. Right. And they're saying that about his latest choice, which is
Rex is his name.
Oh,
Rex Tillerson. Rex Tillerson.
Yeah.
So they're saying that he's being aligned with Bolton because Bolton knows how to walk the aisles and Rex is the kind of the big picture guy. So yeah. Somebody knows the bureaucracy and the labyrinth that you have to go through. And then Rex is going to do what he's supposed to do in that position as Secretary of State.
But make no mistake about it. Usually when you get to this point, especially in the kind of campaign that you just had, imagine you had the Republican establishment that really wasn't behind this guy.
Right.
And now they're engaged, you know. So there's this rumble going on behind the scenes, you know, the Jets and the Sharks. And if you have a sense that they're all sitting around the table – you know, discussing, hey, what do you think about Rex Tillerson? Oh, he's a great guy, and here's his qualifications. No, that's not how it's going, really, you know, on the inside. It's really going that there's a clash of people that are fighting it out to a certain extent, and you know, whoever's standing at the end is the winner. So you don't know where Giuliani fits in that whole paradigm and what the final outcome will be.
Do you think an ambassador would be a bone, or do you think that would be an insult?
Well, ambassador to the Soviet Union, ambassador to France, ambassador to some country that we care about. Yeah, and that might be a reasonable position. I mean, Thomas Jefferson held ambassador to France. It's not a shabby position. Ambassador to the Bahamas. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, of course, that's the job
Pack
I would
want. Your SPF.
Right. And that's the job I would want. I would want, you know, I could see myself in a pair of Bermuda shorts and, you know, it's not like we have to go to, you know, like the Bahamians are ever going to declare war against the United States or vice versa, right? Yeah, the worst thing. Issues that we have to deal with are probably, you know, an increase in the price of suntan lotion or something, you know. So,
Michael, this brings up a question to me because I was at an event last night and I've mentioned him before, but our former Congress member who served for 33 years, I sent him a text in the last month probably. And I said, do you have your name in the queue? And he's like, what are you talking about? And I was like, well, you've had an illustrious career. Why wouldn't you be? And he told me last night that he did finally put himself in the system, if you will. And he's waiting to hear. And here's this man. He's 70 years old. He's served us, our country. He's served us, my community. He's got 10 grandchildren. He's got a beautiful wife. He's got, you know, everything that somebody could want. And he said, and I don't want to go back to work, but it would be an honor. And I'm wondering about you, Michael. Wouldn't you want why wouldn't you be in the administration?
Well, I'm on the wrong team.
No, you know? But he's going to make some partisan and nonpartisan choices.
Well, I don't, you know, part of it is being connected. Although your friend who was a member of Congress, you know, by putting his name in the queue, that's a smart thing to do because they actually have 4,000
positions.
4,000
right.
Positions.
I heard they're over halfway through.
So right. So it's not just picking people you know, right? You got to pick people you don't know, and you got to look at their resumes and stuff. But I don't see where someone like me would fit in. Look, there's not one thing that this man said during his campaign that I agree with. And that doesn't mean – but, you know, one thing I got to shout out to liberals out there is the one thing that I do agree with Kellyanne Conway is when she got in a fight with the DNC people and she said, hashtag, he's your president. And you know what? Y'all got to wake up because hashtag, he's our president. So I don't want to see him fail, but I don't know that I could help him. I'm coming from where I'm coming from.
Really?
I don't know. Yeah. I mean, you know, I disagree on his stance on immigration. I disagree. Yeah, this is something that I wanted to talk about after we talked about some of the nominations, but maybe we should talk about it now. I hear a lot of people saying, and a lot of Republicans saying, you know, the thing that Donald Trump will bring to the table is that he'll run our government like a business. But you know what? It's my opinion that government should not be run by like a business, because if you could run government like a business, you wouldn't need government. The reason you need government is because it can't be run like a business. You can't expect General Motors and Exxon to get together and provide for the national defense or provide for things like Social Security and health care and things like that. And you can't run them like a business. I think the idea that people have is that business is more efficient than government. Oh, my God. Business is so much more efficient than government. On its worst day,
we got to balance the budget for starters. That's business.
That's right. But you can't balance it. You know, that's the perfect example is the balanced budget amendment. They wanted to make a balanced budget mandatory. And people say that's a great idea to make the budget, you know, to require you to have a balanced budget. But think about it on a personal term. Think about if you said in your personal life that I wasn't going to spend any more money than I make, and I make $5,000 a month, and I'm spending $4,500 a month, and anything that costs over pushing me over $5,000, I'm not going to spend. And then they come in and say one of your kids was hurt, and he needs to go to the emergency room, and it's going to cost $1,000. Do you say, well, I'm sorry, but I'm not spending over $500 extra a month. I guess we're just going to have to leave him on the sidewalk. Of course not. You say, here's my visa. You know, and that's the problem you have with the balanced budget in Congress, for example. You know, if it comes to feeding people, if it comes to health care, if it comes to some very basic issues, then no matter what it costs, you have to spend the money.
But you and I have had this conversation before, and I've said, I don't have a problem with giving people fish. I just don't like creating the climate of dependency that is generational. So when somebody is getting something from our system, they should do something for that, not just cash that check. So if it is sweeping streets or walking the kids across the street to school or doing daycare so that other parents can go and do what they need to do, why isn't that? In other words, give them dignity as well as the handout. Everybody comes on to hard times. I don't have a problem with that. But do something for it. Well, I told you there's a climate of dependency. My folks have a Section 8 house that has three generations of baby mamas.
Yes, I know. There
five babies, three baby mamas, the grandmother, the mother, and the daughter, one bathroom, and the government is paying for their rent. And has for 25 years.
Well,
that's wrong.
Well, there certainly is, but there certainly is that aspect. But there's you know, it's a very, very complex problem, especially when you come to welfare, because most welfare money, most people don't understand that most welfare money goes to rich people. It doesn't go to poor people.
You say that because of your mortgage. And I find
well, that's one thing.
That's not
my
fair.
Mortgage. Why isn't that fair?
because it's a legitimate business expense that we made lots of sacrifices to make happen.
Well, you know what? If I live in an apartment and I'm supporting my kids and I'm working some crap job and staying off welfare, I'm also making that sacrifice. But you don't let me write off my rent. You don't let me write off my rent like you let me write off my mortgage. So any so that depends on how you look at it. If you look at a transfer payment from the government as welfare, then all transfer payments are welfare. Now, you know, you can say, look, I work hard, I pay my mortgage. Housing is a part of the backbone of our economy. I help support the real estate industry. I help, you know, all those
things. Wait a second. Property taxes, schools.
There are property taxes.
I know. That's why. It benefits the society. In fact, now that my kids are grown and gone, and I have been a homeowner my entire life, I'm honored to be able to say that. But I also sent my children to Catholic schools, so I paid their tuition on top of my property taxes. Then I sent them to a Christian high school, paid that tuition on top of my property taxes, and then I sent them to college again. Now, I don't really want to have my property taxes go to the schools. And everyone says to me, yes, but that's what makes our property valuable, because other people who do send their kids to public school look into that when they think about where they're going to purchase their home, and that's one of the assets.
Well, that may be true, but it all depends on where you are, isn't it? Because that's why the schools in Arizona suck. The schools in Arizona suck because all those people are retired, and they're saying, you know what? I already put my kids through school.
Is that true? I can't speak to that.
Yeah, it is. I'm not interested in putting your kids through school. My kids have already gotten through school. And then there are other people, you know, that say things like, I put my kids through private school, so why should I have to pay?
Well, that's why I'm a voucher person.
You know?
I'd love
to
have the vouchers be in
effect. But it's really complex. And, you know, most of the people that get welfare are women, and they're women with, you know, there are no, like, able-bodied men welfare programs. They're aid to families with dependent children, WIC, which is the Women, Infants, and Children's Program. There's all those sorts of programs. So it's really, really a complex system. And, you know, you should take great pride in being a California Republican, because it was a California Republican that tried to push the idea of totally overhauling welfare with a negative income tax, and that was Richard Nixon. Richard Nixon pushed a really progressive welfare program called the Family Assistance Plan, which was developed by a liberal member of the United States Senate, Daniel Moynihan. And Moynihan and Nixon worked together to push the FAP, which would have taken away all the welfare programs and given people a negative income tax. It would have set a point at which you were supposed to make X amount of dollars, and anybody that made below that amount would get a welfare payment from the government to do with whatever they chose. It's an amazing study in American politics, because both the left and the right opposed it. And the right opposed it on the basis that if you gave people money to do whatever they wanted to, they would more likely buy liquor and drugs with it and cigarettes than they would buy milk and bread and cheese. Republican senators like Bob Dole, who had an interest in food stamps because he was from Kansas and you had to buy food with it, pushed against it. But also liberal people that you thought would be in favor of it because it was kind of a liberal idea, they were against it too, because it would dismantle the welfare apparatus that they had built. And they want an apparatus, right? They want the welfare this big elaborate welfare apparatus, because it's how they do business. And it's really an interesting study. And I encourage people to look into it because that's our problem now, right? We had this liberal member of the Senate, Daniel Moynihan, and this conservative, socially conservative president in Richard Nixon. And they worked together on what was a really great idea. And we could use more of that in the world.
Interestingly enough, I heard yesterday an interview about the Pentagon, and apparently our budget there hasn't changed over the last 30 years, and yet and still we have less service members, we are less engaged in the world in terms of boots on the ground, et cetera, et cetera. And the point was that once you get inflated and bloated, it's really difficult to cut the fat.
Oh, my God, yeah. And you know that sometimes even with budgets, they'll come to you at the end of the year, as unbelievable as this is, and they'll go, look, guys, we've got to figure out ways to spend money. And you're like, what? And they go, yeah, we got to figure out, because you know what? If you spend less money than you spent last year, than you spent last year, they'll cut your budget.
And so go out and buy. And be more efficient.
Right. So go out and buy a bunch of crap that you don't need and put it in storage if you have to, so that next year we get the same kind of allocation. I mean, yes. And that's why business, you know, not only business is much more efficient because it responds to the what's going on in the marketplace almost instantly, which government never does. But also because you don't have stuff like that. You don't have, you know, you're a hero in business if you save money. You're not necessarily a hero in government if you save money, and that's wrong. We have all sorts of organizations. One, I'm proud to say, gave me an award a few years ago, the Government Accountability Project, and they're an organization here in Washington that protects whistleblowers. But, you know, and we had a terrible problem locally. You know, we had a guy that complained that we had that we were throwing out a lot of food, much of which was rotten on arrival in the school system, because he was the guy in charge of procuring food for the school system, and they had a contract with a company called Cartwells. Well, they fired him for complaining about it. There was a full There was a full-blown investigation. I can't remember if it was initiated by the news media or whatever. They found out that everything the guy said was absolutely true. They fined the vendor millions of dollars, but then they accepted a renewed contract for him from them, which they just fired. They just fired him about a year ago, even though they renewed their contract. They now have another vendor, and the guy just prevailed in court in the District of Columbia and sued the school system and got a six-figure settlement. And I don't think he got enough. I think he should have gotten more. But
his career and reputation were briefly ruined, right?
Right, briefly ruined. And he was right about everything.
But, Michael, that's business that you're talking about, yeah. Is that it, spending more than you need to, spending more because your budget allows you to. If we would put that – and I do think that this is what's going to happen, the bottom line, because of our debt and everything else. If we take care of the bottom line, then everybody benefits. So not your organization necessarily, not your salary necessarily, not your – entity necessarily, but the American people at the end of the day. If we're more efficient and we aren't racking up the debt, then, and we're more cost effective, then how is that not a win-win-win?
Well, you know, there, and we have to reach a balance between those two. And maybe that is the hope that lies with Donald Trump. You know, I don't know how many billions of dollars you're spending on the new Air Force One, but maybe that is something we should look at. You know,
I love that.
I'm used, Yeah, I used to. I
was, I'm all for profit, but not that much.
Well, you know what? I used to run a thing called the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities. They're still there. I used to be their administrator. They're a great public interest group, and they had a thing called the Defense Budget Project. And those guys were the guys that found out that we were spending $800 on bolts that you could buy for 29 cents at Home Depot. We were spending $800 on the same bolt to put in a plane. $800 for toilet seats. I remember
that.
Yeah,
that's the one they keep. Is that urban legend or is that the truth?
No, that's the absolute truth that they spent $800 on toilet seats in planes. And the Defense Budget Project figured it out. Yeah, that's absolutely true. And it's just crazy. So I don't know what we're spending for this plane. And they say that there's a requirement that it has to be safe from a nuclear attack.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I'm not sure how you make it safe. And you know what? I think maybe if they're shooting nuclear missiles at Air Force One, maybe it's too late to do anything at that point. I don't know. But I can tell you another great story quickly is that there's a luxury resort here called the Greenbrier. And
I've heard of that.
Yeah.
That's in D.C.?
No, it's like in West Virginia.
Okay.
And it's beautiful. It's just, you know, it's like one of these old, I'm sure they have them. Well, there's that famous hotel in California. I don't know if it's in San Diego or where. I can't remember the name of it.
Coronado.
You always see it in the movies and
stuff. The Coronado, because the Kennedys went there. That's why.
Well, and that's the kind of place that this is. You know, it's beautiful. Okay. It's up in the mountains. It's a spa. They have fishing and you know, golf, beautiful golf courses that are, you know, designed by people like Sam Snead. And you know, it's just beautiful luxury living. Well, they had a bomb shelter there. And the bomb shelter was filled with luxury food and all sorts of other things. And it was maintained. It was maintained at a ridiculous cost of millions and millions and millions of dollars as kind of a last safe hold for Congress and the president, I guess, or the cabinet and Congress. And for years and years, they maintained it at a cost of millions and millions. I forget how much. And it, of course, it was never used. And they just stopped doing this a few years ago. Well, of course, for the Greenbrier, that was a nice deal, right?
Because
they got millions of dollars a year to maintain a facility that nobody used.
That subsidized their overhead.
Yeah, that subsidized their overhead, right? Who wouldn't want to make a deal like that with the government?
Well,
you know what? If we're all in a nuclear war and everybody in Chicago, Los Angeles, and New York are dying in, and I'm not sure that I want Congress to survive, to be honest with you. I think maybe they should be in the middle of it, and then they have more of an incentive to, you know, to end it. But
the congressman that I keep speaking of, he whatever committee he oversaw, they would go down 5 or 6 stories into a bunker to get briefed every day about the world. And I was like, wow, that's kind of interesting.
Well, they had for years. They maintained, and who knows, maybe we need to get this back, unfortunately, but for years they maintained a White House in Pennsylvania that was an exact replica of the White House for millions and millions of dollars that they used to practice. They used to just practice sending people in to, basically break into the White House in a military operation in case they ever needed to get in there and get the president out.
Really?
And again, it costs millions of dollars.
I bet.
And you know, of course, it's never been, you know, they used it as a training facility, but they stopped it several years ago. There's also a place in West Virginia that I've heard of, and I don't know if this is true, where they store munitions that are obsolete, like hand grenades. You know, they got millions and millions of hand grenades stored. Well, that's just a accident waiting to happen.
Yeah.
And you know, it's, they don't use hand grenades really anymore.
And our listeners may not recall, but I know that you and I do. I think it was once a month the sirens would sound and we'd have to get under our desks.
Yeah.
And put our backs to the window and cover the back of our neck and then our eyes, I believe, was the position that we had to do. And that was for what? Some kind of world tragedy that we were preparing for?
Well, when I was in college, I wore a T-shirt. You know, when I was a long-haired hippie, I wore a T-shirt with the warning from the government, which said, you know, told you how to do that and put your head between your knees. And then the last line was added, and it said, and kiss your ass goodbye. You know, because that's really what we're doing, right? Getting under our desk, putting our heads between our knees. How is that going to save us? We're not crash landed in an airplane. We're, you know, when it comes to wasting government money, there, you know, you could go on and on and on, and there's so many examples of that. And that would get back to your welfare thing too. We talked about welfare fraud when I was at the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities, and one study that we did showed that there was more overruns and waste on the M1 tank on that single defense project than there was in all the estimates of welfare fraud from the time the welfare system started in the 1960s, really in earnest, up until the point where we did the study in the mid-1980s. So in 20 years and more than 20 years of welfare, there was more overruns on the M1 tank project than there had been in all the estimates of fraud in more than 25 years of federal welfare nationwide. So that's just, I mean, some of the things that governments waste money on is crazy. And if Donald Trump can figure out a way to bring those things more into line, that would be a wasting government spending. And that's, you know, that's what we liberals always say, right? We're not gonna cut your welfare payments. We're gonna get rid of the waste and the fraud. But have we gotten rid of the waste and the fraud? I don't know. And we need, you know, if we can focus more on that, that would be great. But what do you think of a guy like Rex Tillerson? Now we have to say that Rex Priebus says he hasn't been chosen yet for Secretary of State. The decision hasn't quite been made yet, but the media is reporting that it actually has. And he's, as you probably know, is the head of ExxonMobil. Is this the guy we want to put with no foreign service experience into the State Department as Secretary of State? And not to mention, they're talking about all his ties to Putin. You know, this is a guy he does business with, right? Because ExxonMobil does business in oil, I guess, and other energy resources within the Soviet Union. Within Russia, I guess there is no Soviet Union anymore. But, you know, do we want to put a guy with no foreign service experience in that position? I don't know. What do you think? Maria, are you there? Uh-oh, we may have lost our feed to Maria, or maybe I've lost my feed to BBS. Can you hear me, BBS? Are we still on the air?
Oh, yeah, you're still on the air.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Maria should be there.
Okay, well, I don't hear Maria, but, you know, that's the question I would ask. Does it make sense? Now, ExxonMobil, you know, is not a small enterprise. It's pretty major. But do we really want to get to have a person like Rex Tillerson, who's a corporate executive, do we really want to have him? I don't know if we've got any callers out there that want to speak to this, but I'd love to know how America feels about having this guy as the Secretary of State. Also, Maria, if you're still out there, I would love to discuss the head of EPA. I think that's a... Are you back with us, Maria? Nope, I guess we've lost Maria temporarily. But, Rex Tillerson is someone that I have a few problems with. I think, the world these days is just too scary a place, and the relationships we have, especially in the Middle East, are too sensitive to put somebody in there that doesn't understand the landscape. And that's what I worry about with Mr. Tillerson, that he doesn't understand the landscape. Are we still on the air, Doug?
Yes, you are.
Okay,
I'm not sure what's wrong with Maria's voice.
Okay.
It appears that she can hear us, just can't get the sound from her to us at this present moment,
okay.
So I'm trying.
All right.
All right.
I hope it's not another conspiracy theory. Maybe they're blocking her out.
Right. I think Maria needs to update Skype, too. It gave me that message prior to that. Yeah, that could be it.
Yeah, that's probably more likely the case, right?
No gremlins this time.
Well, we only have a few minutes left. But then another problem that I have, and maybe Maria and I can talk about this more next week, is that of the nomination of EPA Administrator, the Oklahoma Attorney General Scott Pruitt, who not only sued EPA over its regulation of power in his state of Oklahoma, which in itself is a little troubling to make a litigant in a lawsuit the new EPA chairman, but then he also is a renowned denier of climate science. He doesn't believe, from all accounts, in global warming. And, this flies in the face of all the scientific data out there. And the administration that he is being, is being nominated to head is basically an information agency that has to deal with all the data that's been provided to it and develop a sound policy. And if you're not going to believe the science, the climate science that's out there, how can you possibly run this administration? So,
well, can you hear me now?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Yay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Good.
It was so frustrating because I was answering your questions and your queries, and I was like, oh, Michael's not hearing me. I'm so sorry.
Well, you get the last 2 minutes to answer. What do you think?
I think it is a dicey and interesting position. To deny climate science, as you call it, is probably – ignorant would be even a kind word – ridiculous, even though we do have undulations in the history of our planet that have been on record. But again, it's somebody thinking outside the box, not rank and file, this is how we do business, not this is how it's always been done. And that's what I'm thinking with Tillerson too. He knows how to do business, and we're talking about the business of the United States of America.
But, do we a cost-benefit analysis on our relationship with somebody like Israel? Are we able to calculate what the benefit is to the amount of money that we spend? I don't know that we can do that, and I don't know that it makes sense to do that. And as far as being a denier of climate science, I always remember the advice my sister gave me when I went into business, and she said, don't ever hire a lawyer and not take his advice. Don't hire an accountant and not take their advice, because if you're not going to take their advice, you don't need them. So right. if we can't rely on the advice of the science experts, what good are they? And that's where I leave it. And I give you the last word, my dear colleague, and thank you again for always being there and always helping me make sense of things.
And my pleasure, Michael. And when I explain what it is that we do every week, people are like, you're kidding, especially here in California, because there's usually not intelligent, respectful differences of opinion. It's who can talk loudest and longest and highest or what have you. And I was like, yeah, it is such a pleasure because we do disagree on some fundamental things. I think we agree on more things than we don't. But
yes, I do.
But, you know, and apart from our alliances and our allegiances, but your career and what you've done and how you lead with your heart, it's just inspirational to me. And I'm just always grateful to have the opportunity to be here with you every Sunday afternoon and evening.
Well, thanks. And as always, I think, Maria, you've hit the nail right on the head. That's what it really comes down to, is a matter of respect. And if we can respect each other, then I think we can move things forward. And
I don't
think it matters who our president is. If we respect each other, we can work it out. So let's try to do that, America. Let's respect each other. And let's get rid of the fake news. Thanks, and we'll see you next week.
Yes, have a great week. Enjoy.
Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote.